Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Today's episode is presented by Meta.
Virtual reality training platforms like ForgeFX allow welding students to learn the specialized skills they need to begin and advance welding careers. Meta and the metaverse are having impact today.
The new EU Confidential podcast gets started right after this.
Today's episode is brought to you by BP. We see possibilities in solar farms that float. To see how we're driving worldwide growth in solar through our Lightsource BP partnership, go to bp.com/possibilities everywhere.
We have a deal. And this deal means that there is no need for any kind of prolongation. This is a fair, a balanced agreement. It is testament to our commitment to finding solutions.
Welcome to a special edition of the new EU Confidential, coming to you today from the European Council, the summit of 28 EU leaders. I'm Andrew Gray, Politico's EU editor, and you just heard the President of the European Commission, Jean-Claude Juncker, declaring that we have a Brexit deal. Although that may not be the end of the story, there's at least one big obstacle to overcome before Brexit really means Brexit. And we'll discuss that in just a moment with our podcast panel. We recorded this special edition in and around the summit. You'll hear from European Commission President-elect Ursula von der Leyen, Slovenian Prime Minister Marian Šarec, and Greek Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis, all of whom spoke exclusively to Politico. And we'll tell you the story in a way only Politico can, taking a peek behind the curtain at what it's like to actually cover a summit like this. We'll kick off with our podcast panel to dive into the big news of the summit, the Brexit deal. With me is Reem Momtaz, our Paris correspondent. Hi, Reem.
Hello, everyone.
And fresh in from London, here's Annabel Dixon. Hi, Annabel.
Hello.
So we are in this big atrium in the European Council building, which is converted into a press centre for the duration of these summits. So it's normally a big empty hall with a glass ceiling, and we are surrounded by hundreds of journalists at big long tables. We're all trying to make sense of what's happened today. The big news, of course, is there is a Brexit deal, although perhaps not a done deal, a final deal, but a deal between the British government and the European Union. Annabel, we should start with you. What do you make of it? What's Boris Johnson been saying about it?
Well, I think he defied expectations. There was a lot of scepticism that he was going to manage to do it, to get anything substantial. And he does seem to have got movement from the European Union side. So I think there's surprise. And he was out there just now, I was up in his press conference, and he is ready to sell it. And he's back off to London, probably tonight. He's having dinner with the leaders, and then he's going to hop back on his plane. And now the kind of key bit is to sell it to his MPs back home.
And you see he's got concessions. What are the kind of big wins from his point of view? What's he going to be saying to people back in London, to MPs, as the reasons that they should back this deal when they didn't back Theresa May's?
So I think the key thing for him is that this idea of consent and not being stuck in the backstop. That, if everyone remembers, was the big thing in Parliament, that MP after MP stood up and talked about being trapped in this backstop. So he's managed to get this concession from the European Union that the Northern Ireland Assembly will be able to vote every 4 years about whether to stay in this arrangement. So the arrangement is a customs arrangement, so that the UK, including Northern Ireland, leaves the customs union together, but effectively the checks are going to take place in the Irish Sea.
Right. Reem, what do you make of it? What's Emmanuel Macron been saying about it today?
Well, the main reaction from the French president has been to kind of tell his European friends, I told you so. I told you so, that we shouldn't grant the UK a long extension what they've been saying is that it is because they had this time deadline, this very short deadline with October 31st, that it exerted the right amount of pressure to get everyone through to the finish line. That is what the president is saying. Macron seems to want to kind of take credit for this deal, but at the same time, they're saying we have to also be reasonably cautious and prudent because we've seen this before. History tells us that there's been a deal before between the EU and the UK, and three times the UK Parliament has sort of voted it down. So they're being cautious about it, even though a French diplomatic official did tell us that they heard that the UK Prime Minister did an MP by MP count to be sure that he does have the votes.
Well, we'll see if that's true. It's amazing how, you know, it's the old thing about success having many fathers there. The Polish Prime Minister was also claiming credit for Polish diplomacy somewhere in all of this. Their tune might be a bit different next week. So, Annabel, can you give us a sense of what might be the coalition in Parliament that Boris Johnson could put together? Because, you know, as Reem says, and as you know, the House of Commons didn't just vote this down, they absolutely destroyed it. I mean, it was, you know, defeated so heavily, the previous deal under Theresa May. So what's the potential coalition that he could put together that Theresa May couldn't?
Time after time, you know, three times, she had that brutal defeat. So the DUP, the Democratic Union Party, are not on board, and they are Boris Johnson's confidence and supply partners, and they do not like this deal. They don't think the consent mechanism gives them enough power. So it's going to be very difficult. But there's a sort of glimmer of hope in that opposition Labour Party MPs are starting to get fed up. So they are going to be the key. Without the Democratic Unionist Party votes, you need those Labour Party votes. He's got a few more Conservative MPs than he did, so those hardline Spartans. There's still a few who haven't declared as we sit here, but he's definitely got more. But those Labour MPs are going to be crucial. And I expect over the next few hours, you know, before Saturday's vote, we might hear more assurances on workers' rights. That's one of the big things for Labour MPs to help get them over the line. So there may be sort of domestic assurances that he can make to help just nudge them.
What about the people that he basically expelled from the party, you know, the Philip Hammonds, these other people? So in a sense, he hasn't even, his working majority doesn't exist, right? I mean, are any of those people going to vote for this, do you think?
Again, they're undecided, and we'll have to see what happens in the next few hours. But there is the potential for them to vote for it, because a lot of them have said all along that they want to back a deal. They backed Theresa May's deal. And this actually isn't hugely different from Theresa May's deal. Also, it could be a way back into the party for them. So there is hope there.
Okay, well, it sounds like it's all to play for in the next few days. But obviously, one thing that people are going to have to think about in this side is if Boris Johnson does not manage to get the votes, there's talk of a meeting of EU ambassadors here on Sunday when people are going to have to try and figure out, and this will include, obviously, the French government and others, what do they do then? What do you think, Reem, if this comes down to it, that, and of course we would have to suppose that in some form or other the British government would ask for an extension. If they did, what do you think the French above all would say or do?
I mean, given today's peacocking by the French on the short extension, I really don't see them taking a much softer line. I would expect they would not really want to grant an extension, and if they were persuaded to grant one, it would be a very, very short one, because they want to keep the pressure on. The French also, you know, they've been asked now repeatedly, this deal that they were able to, that the EU was able to make with Johnson, was it also caving to pressure from a Boris Johnson who was much more brash than Theresa May, who was all about do or die, preferring to die in a ditch than to, you know, ask for an extension? And, you know, is that sending a signal that actually the more populist you are, the more outrageous you are in your pressure, then you can actually make the EU cave to certain conditions? That's a very fine line they're not going to want to sort of go down too far into.
Yeah. Annabel, what is the plan B, do you think, if in the UK, if the deal doesn't pass? Is it to ask for an extension, or is it to find a way to go for no deal at the end of the month?
the government line is very much we're going to obey the law. So I think there's an acceptance in number 10 that they have to obey by the letter of the law this act that was put forward by MPs and voted for by the House of Commons. So I think they will, but it will be done with a big song and dance about how this is not something that Boris Johnson wants to be doing. He'll make it very clear that it's not his preferred course of action. So it will come with a very loud message that he doesn't want an extension.
Almost a raspberry, maybe more than a message.
Yes.
That's somebody's phone. That's the sound of actual journalism taking place around us here. I don't know whose it is and I don't know how to stop it. So, but maybe that's our moment to wrap up here, and of course with the thought that we could all be back here in a week or two discussing exactly that extension. So Reem, Annabelle, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Now that we've dealt with the breaking news, we wanted to take you behind the scenes here to tell the story of the summit and give you a sense of what it's like to cover these European Council shindigs. The first thing to say is that there are summits even before the summit. These are gatherings of Europe's big political families who try to get together and coordinate their lines before the big event, the European Council. And earlier today, the French President Emmanuel Macron made his debut at one of these pre-summits, the meeting of Renew Europe, the group he's recently formed with European liberals. Politico's Maya de la Baume was there, and she takes us behind the curtain.
We are right now at the Cercle de Lorraine, which basically is a place where the liberal family is gathering now. And right above us right now, the liberal leaders of Europe are all discussing around one table what they will say in the European Council. So for journalists here in Brussels, these pre-summits are our routine. And they're interesting because they're organized in a more, let's say, private, a little less formal atmosphere. And we get to talk to these leaders more directly and without the whole European Council protocol in some ways. In terms of us, in terms of journalists, it's always a little hard because you have this sort of tradition of the doorstep here in Brussels, which means that you are standing generally in the cold, because Brussels is always more or less cold. And you don't always know what you'll get. You don't always know if leaders will stop and talk to you.
In Maya's case, the French president did stop and talk with reporters, inevitably being asked about Brexit by a British reporter.
This is not my job. As long as I'm here, I'm not your prime minister. This is your prime minister to deliver now a vote at your parliament. My understanding is that his view is that now he's in a situation to get the majority at the parliament, and I do hope it will be the case.
But does he have the numbers? Do you have an indication from Boris Johnson that
he
will
get
the numbers?
No, I think we have a good indication that he's now reasonably optimistic, and that's final discussions.
And after those pre-summits, 28 heads of state and government converge here at the European Council building. So we're standing kind of in a building within a building, which is the European Council building, and there's this big glass, they call it the space egg sometimes, and then there's a kind of courtyard round about it, and then beyond that are the outer windows of the council building, and there's a red carpet running alongside the space egg and a lot of national flags, and this is where the leaders make their entrance and stake out their positions, tell us what they're going to be telling other leaders at the summit, and they walk along this red carpet and will stop by the big bank of reporters and cameras and give their positions and just spell out what's important for them, what they want to achieve from the summit. And the thing here is, this is, I used to think this wasn't very important, this was just cameras for the sound bites. Oh, here comes Ursula von der Leyen, so making her debut at the European Council as President-elect of the Commission. I'd obviously hope that she might be coming this way. Okay. President-elect, bonjour. What are you expecting from the summit today?
Ich freue mich sehr auf diesen Gipfel, zu dem ich.
At first, as you can hear, von der Leyen answers us in her native German. She has three main talking points. She says it doesn't look like there will be a decision on enlargement, and makes clear she's not happy about that. The news is a blow for the governments of North Macedonia and Albania, which had both hoped to be invited to start EU membership talks.
She also says EU members are far apart on the long-term budget and she wants more money for new priorities. And, of course, she talks about Brexit. And then she walked away, but to her credit, she then came back and talked Brexit in English.
Wenn ich eine Frage auf Englisch fragen darf? Eine Frage auf Englisch?
Are you relieved? Okay. Yes, on one hand, I'm relieved that there is an agreement. It's good for people, for the economy, and, of course, a good starting point for future relation. On the other hand, I'm sad that our British friends are going to leave the European Union. But it is better to have it in an order.
But aren't you worried that it will, again, like happened with Theresa May, that Boris Johnson will not get into the parliament?
Well, at the moment being, we haven't.
Von der Leyen wasn't the only person we caught up with on the red carpet. We also spoke with Slovenian Prime Minister Marjan Šarec. Prime Minister, good to see you again. How are you? Thanks very much for taking the time to talk to us. What do you expect from today's summit? First of all, on Brexit, are you optimistic about this deal?
Well, as we hear, the deal is reached. I hope that this deal, which was born in very hard efforts, I hope that in Westminster it will be a yes, and then in European Parliament, because I think it's maybe the last chance for any deal. Mm.
Another big topic for Slovenia certainly is enlargement, which is going to be discussed tonight. Do you have any hope that there could be a deal that allows North Macedonia and or Albania to start membership talks?
Well, we promised North Macedonia to start negotiations because they did everything what was expected from them. They even changed their name. So it's a very big step, and it's time to deliver now what we promised.
Did you say that to Emmanuel Macron when you saw him this morning?
Yes, I said it. I said that North Macedonia deserves to start negotiations. Otherwise, it will be very difficult to persuade people on the Western Balkans that European Union is serious.
And did you have the impression he was open to that argument?
We'll see about it.
Okay. Can you give us a sense now, just for our listeners, for members of the public, obviously you meet behind closed doors. What's the atmosphere like in these meetings, and how do they take place? Is Donald Tusk very much in charge, or is it a kind of free-flowing discussion? How would you describe it?
Well, it depends on the topics. When it's some crucial topics, it's very tensed. Sometimes it's very relaxed. It depends.
And what language do people speak in?
They speak in their own languages, but also in English, but mostly in their own languages.
And what kind of atmosphere do you expect today, especially tonight, when it comes to enlargement?
I expect the unexpected.
Okay, thank you very much, Prime Minister. After they've done their doorsteps, the leaders head into the big meeting chamber in the Europa Building, also known as the Space Egg. And of course, Brexit was first on the agenda. At that point, the reporters leave the giant atrium with the red carpet, weave their way through corridors, up an elevator, across a bridge, into another giant atrium in the Justus Lipsius Building, which I've already described a bit, and it's quite hard to give you a full sense of it, but reporters and camera people are packed into the place. It's filled with lights and laptops, and those reporters are, of course, trying to find out what's going on behind closed doors at the summit. So there's a lot of texting and trying to meet up with sources. And we at Politico have probably one of the biggest groups here at the summit, reporters and editors coming in and out, feeding the live blog, going to briefings, meeting sources, and commiserating about the lack of decent food. Let's take you over to the cafe. So right now we're in the Café Autriche, which is the cafe in the corner of one of the European Council buildings. And this is where people gather, especially journalists, but not only journalists, officials and members of the different delegations. And it's quite an old school cafe in a lot of ways. I mean, it's got a big metal counter and some ladies and some men behind the counter, but the ladies are
They've got a good old-fashioned kind of humour about them. This is not by no means a hipster cafe, that's for sure. They've got them, they're kind of dressed in the white uniform, the white caps and all of that. Yeah, hair nets. It's a bit of a throwback. So this is a little corner where occasionally, it's often where journalists get together. I see our own David Herzenhorn with many cups of coffee. Taking. Are they all for you?
No, one is for Jacopo, but he got scared by the line. So
okay. Yeah.
We can come back.
Yeah, well, we're probably going to need all of those by the end of the night. David has about three or four coffees there.
The press bar.
Yeah, it's nice. We're giving people the inside scoop, you know, how it feels. This is kind of, to be honest, this is where people gather when they don't really have anything to do or don't know what's going on. And they have, you know, they're kind of hoping that somebody else does. And so they're kind of wandering around.
It's reporters interviewing reporters.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going on. A bit like now.
Well, it doesn't help that the council cafeteria is closed for a year and a half of renovations.
Yeah.
This is the only food in the building.
Yeah, I was just saying that those used to be one of the highlights, getting into the canteen with the riot police, getting a full meal for about €4. Yeah, but we're deprived of that experience now because it's closed for a major renovation. After the afternoon session, it's press conference time. When the EU big shots pass through this room, there's a rush of people towards them as reporters try to grab a question before they reach the main press room. We don't always get a press conference at this time, but today we got a bunch of them because lots of people wanted to get their messages out about Brexit. UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson, for example.
This is a great deal for our country, for the UK. I also believe it's a very good deal for our friends in the EU. And what it means is that we in the UK can come out of the EU as one united kingdom. England, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland, together. And it means we can decide our future together. We can take back control, as the phrase goes, of our money, our borders, our laws, together. And we will be able to do free trade agreements around the world. And I'm very confident that when my colleagues in Parliament study this agreement, that they will want to vote for it on Saturday and then in succeeding days.
And here's European Council President Donald Tusk.
On a more personal note, what I feel today is, frankly speaking, sadness. Because in my heart, I will always be a Remainer. And I hope that if our British friends decide to return one day, our door will always be open.
And after those press conferences, it was dinner time. For the leaders, that meant scallops with pumpkin mousse, sauerkraut soup, roast veal with green beans and fondant, potato and figs in puff pastry, and a chewy discussion on enlargement. These sessions often go late into the night, which is why we're recording this podcast at around midnight. And one of the people who's at that dinner right now is the Prime Minister of Greece, Kyriakos Mitsotakis, who's making his debut at the summit. Earlier in the day, he stopped by our political offices and spoke to Brussels Playbook author Florian Eder. Among other things, they talked about enlargement and the Prime Minister's expectations of his first summit. We'll hear that interview right after a quick message from this week's sponsor.
A message from BP. A race to renewables will not be enough. To deliver lower emissions, the world must make all forms of energy cleaner and better. Read about the many possibilities we see to make this happen at bp.com/possibilities everywhere.
And now, Florian Eder speaks with Greek Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis, ahead of the European Council.
This is a summit meeting that has that has only key issues on the agenda, from Brexit to Turkey, migration, enlargement, climate change, and the EU budget, and that's in order of appearance. Mm-hmm. How would you rank them in order of importance for Europe and for your country?
Well, as far as Greece is concerned, obviously the issues that are related to our region are of the utmost importance. As I feel that Greece finds itself at the crossroads of many of the challenges that the European Union is facing. We are concerned with the increased level of refugees and migrants that have been crossing the Aegean over the past months. Obviously, we're very concerned with what's happening in Syria. We were one of the first European countries to condemn the illegal drilling activities of Turkey within the Cypriot exclusive economic zone. So there's a lot of turbulence in a region, which is also combined with the progress or non-progress that will be made regarding accession talks for our northern neighbors. So I think a lot of topics where Greece has a lot of value to contribute to this discussion.
Let's start with migration and Turkey for a while. It is the biggest geopolitical issue on the agenda indeed. So the European Council today is going to talk about the about Turkey's incursion in northern Syria, about the drilling activities that you mentioned in Cyprus, and about the migration deal and its potential renewal. Are these three, they are of course interlinked, but is it compatible?
Well, first of all, we need to be absolutely clear that the European Union needs to condemn with one voice what has been happening in Syria. It has already done so, and it obviously needs to do so also at the level of the Council, as it needs to reconfirm you know, the statement made at the General Council regarding a framework for targeted sanctions against those who are involved in the illegal drillings inside Cyprus's exclusive economic zone. And I think that there is overall consensus amongst member states that these two decisions need to be taken. Now, on the migration side, I've openly said from the first day I took over that we have an agreement, a European agreement with Turkey. I'm referring to the EU-Turkey statement that has more or less served us well, but we have reached a point where everyone needs to do more. And certainly what is not acceptable is for Turkey to use the migration issue as a lever and to blackmail the European Union to provide Turkey with more financial assistance. We have provided Turkey with a lot of money, and I think that an arrangement in terms of supporting the people who are seeking shelter in Turkey can be discussed, but it cannot be discussed within the context of a relationship that is becoming extremely polarized, and certainly not in the context of Turkey blackmailing Europe and threatening that it will sort of open up its borders and flood Europe with migrants and refugees.
Is that a credible threat at all?
I don't think it's a particular. I don't think it is a credible threat to the extent that we will suddenly be faced with an influx of millions of people. But it is still a situation which is extremely worrisome. I will be making the case that the European Union needs some sort of firefighting plan, a plan B, to address what is currently, to make sure that what is currently an emergency does not turn into a full-blown crisis.
You mentioned the enlargement process before. Greece was not against starting accession talks with North Macedonia this week, but France was. How big a surprise was that for you?
Okay, we've always said that we want to anchor the Western Balkans into the European Union. We've acknowledged that this is a long path. We are fully aware of the fact that a lot of progress needs to be made in both countries, but we, in principle, we support this this process under certain conditions. What are the conditions? Full respect for international agreements. As you know, an international agreement was signed between Greece and Northern Macedonia. I personally did not support it. I have my reservations about the agreement, but I've also publicly stated that I will respect it, given that it is an international agreement, but we need to be absolutely certain that North Macedonia complies with the provisions of this agreement, and this is a necessary precondition for us. As far as Albania is concerned, there are real issues regarding rule of law and the protection of minorities, which is an issue of great sensitivity for Greece, but it should also be an issue of great sensitivity for Europe. So we need to see progress on all those fronts. But in principle, we do support this process, and I think that we need to send a signal to those countries that they can aspire, assuming all conditionalities are met, that they can aspire to at some point becoming members of the European family.
Is that a credibility issue also for the European Union?
I'm not going to comment on discussions that were made before I took power, but it is clear that from 2003 there was a commitment to gradually integrate the Western Balkans into Europe. We aspire to play a leadership role in the Western Balkans. Greece is emerging from a decade of economic crisis. Our economy is growing again. We feel much more confident. And that will allow us to play a more meaningful and impactful regional role.
It is your first European Council. We've now talked about it. Who are you most looking forward to meet or see again?
I think I've more or less, within the context of the EPP, I certainly have met all the, all the EPP heads of state and government. But I've also met quite a few of my council counterparts. I'm certainly eager to meet those who have never met. They're not that that many of them. But it's certainly also an opportunity for me to introduce myself, but also to introduce what has happened in Greece over the past months. I think it is important for Europe as a whole to recognize that a moderate center-right party succeeded in defeating populism. So there is no extreme right neo-fascist party represented in the Greek parliament. I think that's a ray of hope, not just for Greece, but also for Europe as a whole. And it is very important for me to introduce Greece as a country that is leaving the crisis behind, that is actively participating in the forward-looking agenda of the European Union, and a country that is growing, hopefully, above the EU average, that is attracting investment, and that is making life much better for Greeks. And I think this is, after 10 years of crisis, whenever, a discussion about, Greece, whenever the Greek topic came up at these discussions, it was usually not for good. Hopefully we've left these days behind us.
So it's not just you're not just in listening mode, you're planning to be very active.
That's my intention, and on other topics which I consider to be very important for the European agenda, for example, climate change, energy transition. We have announced that we want to decarbonize in a much more aggressive manner than was previously anticipated. We will shut down all our lignite plants. We are a lignite-producing country. We don't import coal or lignites, but we intend to shut down all our lignite-producing plants by 2028, and we intend to play a leadership role in defining the framework for the just transition mechanism. So Greece intends to be at the forefront of the energy transition agenda within the European Union, but we walk the talk. We don't just talk about it. It's not an easy decision because we have an entire region, Western Macedonia, that is very dependent on electricity production from lignite. But we have explained to the people in the region that if we are the leaders in this effort, we can also aspire to be leaders in terms of framing the just transition mechanism in a way that will help this particular region make the transition from a carbon-intensive region to a carbon-neutral region. So this is also a topic where I intend to play a leading role. We want to ban single-use plastics in Greece in total by 2021. I'm very concerned about our marine environment. Obviously, we are a country which is very dependent on tourism and wants to has to protect its marine habitat. So, and of course, when it comes to returning to the previous topic, when it comes to border management, migration, the role of Frontex, common asylum, common migration, asylum pact, how do we deal with these issues? These are priority areas for us, and we expect, and I'm sure there will be lots of initiatives by the new commission. I've discussed this with the new commission president, and I'm sure that her agenda is very much in line with what we hope to achieve on that front.
Thank you very much, Prime Minister, for this interview.
Thank you.
Best of luck for your first summit today.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Florian.
That was Florian Eder speaking with the Prime Minister of Greece ahead of the European Council. It's now the wee hours of the morning on Friday as we wrap up this episode of EU Confidential. If you enjoyed the podcast, please spread the word about it and feel free to rate, review and subscribe. Special thanks to producer Christina Gonzalez. I'm Andrew Gray in Brussels. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.